Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben, and today we are joined by our super production team, the dynamic duo of Tristan McNeil and Dylan Fagan. So say hi to them while you're listening along, and we'll figure out some nicknames. I'm thinking, I like Tristan Cool Grand McNeil.
Cool Grand is a good one. Mm-hmm. I like it.
And this is going to be one of the podcasts where you and I, Scott, figure out how to make the maximum possible numbers of slang terms for money.
Yeah, maybe. We might come up with a couple along the way, probably some oldies but goodies. But the topic of today, I mean, is something that I think a lot of people are probably pretty interested in. I mean, it seems like we get a lot of email from people that say, look, I just need a car for winter use, or I just need a car just to get me by until, I can, get that new job and then get my new ride.
Right. Or my child is beginning to drive, my teen, and so I want to get them a car. I want them to have that ability to drive places, but yeah, I don't want to get them, a super fancy thing, especially because statistically, they might send it to the boneyard in 3 months.
Well, that's true. I mean, and, there's other concerns there too, safety and things like that, but mm-hmm. and modern features, I suppose.
Right.
But, a lot of people don't have 10 grand to drop on a kid's first new car, something like that, or in that mm-hmm. ballpark, let's say 5 to 7. But if you are looking for a real bargain, and we're talking about a $1,000 used car, but with the qualifier, good used car.
Yes, a car that will not just be essentially an expensive rental, not a temporary solution, but a car that you can acquire that will not only pass muster, like pass emissions, that's mm-hmm. a big one.
Oh yeah.
But also be reliable for for a decent amount of time.
Yeah, safe. Yeah. Something safe, something reliable, something you can get to and from work or school and that kind of thing. It may not be pretty, but it gets you there. All right, so there's a few things that I want to mention here before we really jump in. And one is that we've done a few other previous Car Stuff episodes that kind of relate to used cars in a lot of ways. We've done 10 used cars to avoid back in August of 2014.
Which still remains relevant.
It sure does, yeah. And then we've also got used car salesman tips and tricks. And that is from August 2013, and that one may be more relevant than ever for today's episode, really. Mm. I mean, because we're talking about people that are auctioning and selling cars, really.
Sure.
But the guy that wrote this article that we're going to follow along with, and it comes from Car and Driver, and the guy's name is Stephen Lang. Now, you may think, well, what does Stephen Lang know about cars, really? I mean, about, buying a cheap car.
Oh, no, he's not just some ordinary Joe Schmo talking to you at the Applebee's.
No. This guy has been an auto auctioneer. He was a car dealer, and he is also a part-time owner of an auto auction for about 2 decades now. So he knows his stuff. He knows how to get good deals. He knows where to get good deals. And that's the thrust of today's episode is where, because we're going to run through about 6 different ways or places to find a new car deal. And we'll tell you these places kind of in order, I guess, like from the worst to the uh-huh. best. And I will tell you, I'll tell you this, is that at the end of this episode, the very, very end, we're going to tell you what the author calls the uncomfortable truth at the very end of the
yes.
show. So make sure you stick around for that. But along the way, I want to caution you about this because, we're not advocating that you go out and buy an auction car. We're not saying mm-hmm. that, this is, the only way to do this. There are other ways that this can happen as well. You can find a decent used car for $1,000. And I understand that, families give cars to each other for $1 and that kind of thing happens. But these are, party-to-party sales. I don't know if that's the best way to say it, Ben. I don't even know if there is a good, there's no B2B example for this because it's mm-hmm. a little bit of everything. It's an auctioneer selling to, or an auction house selling to a private individual, or you're buying from a government, or, you're buying from a bigger institution or something.
Sure.
So there's a lot of variation in this, and I one more word of caution, because we've talked about this on in our show. I know we have.
Mm-hmm.
The flood damage car thing.
Oh yes.
So
watch out.
So essentially, that comes down to salvage cars and auction cars that we're going to talk about today. You have to understand, auction cars are not always salvage cars. But salvage cars can be very, very tempting if you see them. You can search online, and I welcome you to do this. I did this just today before we came into the studio.
Uh-huh.
I searched salvage cars Florida because it's, you know, close to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that, you know, there are lots of salvage car places down there. So, you know, it's like fish in a barrel, you know.
Right.
So I searched for that, checked the first one that comes up, and it's sure enough, it's got loads of modern cars, classic cars, light and heavy-duty trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, snowmobiles in Florida, Ben.
Uh-huh.
A couple of those, which I thought was weird. But you'll find that, I mean, they're so tempting. I've been tempted by these late at night on eBay or wherever they sell them, or even just on their own site, you know, where you find a Lamborghini for $20,000 to $40,000, you know, with a little bit of front-end damage,
mm-hmm.
and you think, oh, my God, I could drive the Lamborghini for $40,000, and it doesn't look – it looks like it's cosmetic damage.
Right.
There's a reason it's $40,000 and not $240,000.
And it's not cosmetic.
No, it's not. I mean, here's a good example. One more example, then we'll jump in, I hope. There was a 2004 Ferrari Enzo on a site called ReadyToFix.com.
Uh-huh.
And this is, again, a salvage car. Again, 2004 Ferrari Enzo, $305,000. It's still a lot of money, but it had right front collision damage. And, you know, there's other things on the site, too, like theft recovery. There's flood damage. There's engine fires. But, man, you've got to really, really be willing to take a leap of faith if you're going to buy one of those vehicles. And you have to really know your stuff. You have to know what you're looking at before you really jump in, you know, both feet first on something like this.
And we will say, just in general, just as a rule of thumb, don't buy a flood-damaged car.
No,
just
never.
Don't.
No, don't do it. Never,
it's
ever.
Not worth it.
Hey, didn't we talk about cars that were Hurricane Katrina cars?
Yeah, that's where a lot came from.
They were being sold in, where was it? I think it was Central America or possibly South America, but I think it was Central.
Mm-hmm.
And people knowingly bought them, you know, understanding that there was flood damage. There was, I think they called them water flow damage or something like that. And people bought them, but they were really, really regretting their choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And when we say people bought them, they were really regretting their choice, we don't mean some of them. We mean virtually every single person.
Yeah, yeah. And other people, you know, inadvertently buy a flood-damaged car, you know, from a used car dealer on the corner mm-hmm. or something, or an auction or something. And always trouble a little later on. Maybe not initially, but mm-hmm. a little later on, and it's severe.
So that's the lay of the land for some earlier reference points. If you are interested in this topic because it directly applies to you now, then we do ask that before you go out with what do we call it? With one large, like what is it?
Oh, I guess I don't know.
A brand?
Yeah, I don't know. What do they call that?
I don't know.
One big?
Sure.
I don't know. No, that's not it. But I mean, yeah, one large maybe. How about that?
Okay, we could do better. But that'll work for now.
To me, that's $100.
All right. To me, it's a pizza.
So $1,000.
Yeah. So now that we have the lay of the land, before you go and purchase a vehicle for that price, or any used vehicle, if you haven't listened to those earlier episodes, give them a listen before you go out there on the prowl for a new car or new used car. The author of the article that inspired today's episode does a great job setting this up when he points out the following. Today, like in the modern time, it's not only as easy as it's ever been to buy a vehicle for $1,000 or even less, it's actually easier to find those offers because online communication has allowed a lot of people to sell stuff directly. But the problem is, where do you get a good used car for $1,000? Because it's not like, you know, now that there's this proliferation of private sellers and, you know, as you said, it's got auctioneers and stuff existing almost entirely online. There are a heck of a lot more choices available, right?
Yeah, it used to be that you'd have to drive around town and find the deals.
Yeah, or, you know, pick up the old classifieds, right?
Yeah, the Auto Trader.
Yeah, right by the edge of the grocery store
yeah,
threshold.
With those little postage stamp size ads, you know, that maybe 20 words and everybody's trying to abbreviate everything so that they get the most words in.
And all the pictures look like the same blurry pickup.
Yeah, that's right.
But those things still exist and they're valuable, but we've gone beyond that.
Sure.
And that
well, Craigslist and eBay. And,
sure.
You know, anybody can offer up a car for sale, and anybody anywhere can find that car for sale.
And that means it's even more difficult to figure out what a worthwhile deal is.
Yeah, what's junk and what's quality. So this author, again, he he's a part owner of an auto auction facility, I believe. For nearly two decades, it said. And also remember, he was an auctioneer and a car dealer, and along the way, so he's got a lot of experience. He says we'll start with the worst choice of all here. So
yeah,
we'll go through these six, and here's I guess if you want to call it number one, fine, or if you want to call it number six, fine. We'll either count down or count up. But but the worst available option to you is an impound lot.
Absolutely, absolutely. But specifically, you might be asking why. That's because there is a tendency for cars that end up in an impound lot to be, you might hear, being called crusher fodder or chop shop ready, because as a single unit, they're not worth that much. The individual components or parts are actually worth more being sold individually.
Yeah, you have to remember the impound lots are full of vehicles that are brought in by, wrecker services and tow yards. So they're abandoned vehicles, really. And that's the majority of what you're going to find on those lots. So you know that it's something that somebody has just kind of discarded. They've abandoned it, really. They've decided that they, broke down on the side of the road and they just walked away and that was it. Or they parked it somewhere and, again, walked away. And there's very few examples where there's the odd time when maybe they'll seize like a drug lord's cars or something, like
sure.
A whole collection, and there's something really unusual. They'll have SUVs and whatever else, Cadillacs and sports cars and all that kind of stuff and toys, but that's not the case most of the time. You have to be very, very lucky to find something like that on the impound lot. You may find that somewhere else, maybe even some places we'll talk about today, but some of these cars are, drunk driving offenses or,
sure.
Prostitution offenses or something where they take the car, they impound the car, and people don't have enough to pay for it to get it back out.
Or they're not out of jail.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is tough to say, but true.
And the problem with this is that a lot of these cars are extremely rough around the edges. They're not something that is going to be a pretty vehicle by any means. Not a lot of what we're going to talk about today, as you can imagine, with the 1,000 or less cap, are going to be pretty. But these are really, really worn out.
Yeah, and there's something else that I think we should point out. I'm going to go ahead and throw some more cold water on the idea of winning the impound lottery and finding the diamond in the rough.
Mm-hmm.
Even when those cars come in, they're rare enough that the owner of the lot or employees who work on the lot are already going to know it's there, and they're probably going to move pretty quick on it too. So unless you have a buddy who works at an impound lot, I'm going to go ahead and say your odds of finding a decent entire car that you can like drive off the lot and not have problems with other than regular maintenance,
mm-hmm.
virtually zero. Might as well buy a scratch off.
All right, so then the question is, why would you ever shop in an impound lot? And there's a good reason.
There's a great reason. It's one of the best places to buy a parts car.
Yeah, so if you have like a 1990s Honda Civic or a Toyota or something like that, you might be able to find a relatively cheap car that has a decent engine in it and something that you want to swap out. And of course, it's going to be worth whatever they're charging for that. Whether it's $500 or $200 or whatever it is, but that's definitely worth it.
Yeah, and this makes me think, while we're on impound lots and before we go to the next thing, this makes me think of that awesome video we saw, which I don't think we've mentioned on air yet, of the lot that had the everything you can carry for a flat fee gimmick day.
That's right. I think one of our listeners, was it Rudy?
It was Rudy.
Smith sent it. And he said, hey, check out this video. And it was an all you can carry? It looked like it was in the Southwest somewhere.
It was insane.
All you can carry for, $59.99 that day or something.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't believe some of the antics that were going on. You had to carry it a certain distance, and there was a walkway, I guess.
Right, with little traffic cones on either side.
Yeah, and flags. And, mm-hmm. Somebody said, okay, you start here and you end here. As soon as you cross the line, it's yours for $60, whatever you've got on your back or arms or whatever.
If you cross the line.
Yeah, well, and they're using rope to tie parts onto their body, and they're balancing things on their shoulders.
There are people trying to carry engine blocks.
Yeah, they've got stacks that look like it's something out of a Dr. Seuss book that they're carrying. sharing over the line. But you know, once they crossed that threshold, man, they were so exhausted they just dropped it and collapsed.
Some people ruin their backs doing that.
Absolutely, yeah. Some people are a little more, you know, common sense about it, but others were definitely not. And you know, one quick thing here before we wrap up impound yards.
Yeah,
you got to remember that a lot of these cars don't run. There's a reason they were abandoned on the side of the road or abandoned, you know, wherever they were parked. So it's not just someone walked away. It could be that, you know, they don't run. So, you know, I don't know. It seems like a bad idea all around to go to an impound lot to buy a running used car.
Yeah, that's true. It's very difficult. But there is a slightly better category, right?
Yeah.
And it's our next one up. Junkyards.
Yeah, junkyards sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes are licensed to sell running cars. You know, we typically think of these places as places to pick up parts, you know, to strip other vehicles that are on the lot, you know. And again, to carry things out for $59.99, everything you can carry. But the majority of these vehicles, in fact, millions of them, are sold by these big salvage and auto auction companies. Like, you know, there's a couple of national brands that have become kind of the popular ones.
Yeah, the big fish, Copart.
Yeah, and insurance auto auctions, as listed in this article. But a small percentage of the older cars that still run but are also deemed total because, you know, the replacement parts are expensive or, you know, they've got something they knocked out a, I'm going to say, like an air compressor or something, you know, behind the panel that was too expensive to repair.
Right.
The insurance company just said it's a total loss. There's a small percentage of cars on the junkyard lots that are like that. And if you're willing to put up with that, you know, with some of the cosmetic stuff, some of the scratches and dents and dings, that may be the place for you.
Yeah, like the car is old enough or its mileage is high enough that replacing the bumper from a front collision is just not worth it financially, right? Yeah. But that means it might be worth it to you if you don't mind driving, you know, an ugly duckling. So,
well, that's true. And the author says, you know, it's not always easy on the ego to buy a car that looks as if it got into a fight and lost. But if dents, scuffs, and, you know, older metal are your personal ticket to cheap motoring, then you should call up your local junkyard and see what they may have available. And again, it won't be pretty, but it'll do. And, you know, again, just call them and see what they have to offer.
Word of caution, though.
Yeah, be very, very cautious because you really shouldn't expect a whole lot. And the other thing is that some states, not all states, but some states are a little bit looser with the way they restrict or regulate some of these sales. So you got to be careful what you're getting into and really investigate the laws in your state for junkyard sales. But it's possible.
It is. It's still better than an impound lot. And next we're going to dive into something that, honestly, Scott, really surprised me. I was caught flat-footed by this. I had no idea what it was, and hopefully, listeners, you'll be surprised too after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Scott, did this surprise you too?
Oh, I'm very intrigued by this one. Yeah, I really hadn't thought of this. Now, I've heard of other auctions happening at these places, but not an auto auction. And I guess, I mean, it's probably more common than we think, really.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a big world, huh? Well,
apparently so.
We're talking about airport auctions. Here's the thing. I know. Sounds crazy. I also want to point out that, no, to Scott and I's knowledge, they are not auctioning planes, usually. But here's what happens, folks. Some people take a one-way flight overseas and just never come back.
Yeah, that's right. So they park the car in the long-term lot or even the short-term lot and just decide that, you know, that's it. They're not coming back. They're going to extend their vacation forever or longer than, you know, the lot will allow.
Yeah.
And they come back and find their vehicle missing or you know,
they're going to go, like, fake their death or escape the feds or something. Who knows?
Yeah, well, there's passport issues and there's work visas and things like that that cause complications, right? Or let's say somebody who's arrested overseas or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That happens. But the resulting abandoned cars, you know, that come from those situations have a big advantage over, you know, some of the other options that we've gone over so far today, and that is that you know that they were running when they were parked on this lot.
Yeah, that's true. And there are extreme cases of this that are related. We did an entire episode about a very strange phenomenon in Saudi Arabia, I believe it is, where due to the way debt and work visas, due to the way they're legally regulated in that country, there were a lot of people from a different part of the world who were high on the hog and bought these fantastic exotic sports cars, but then had to skip town in like 24 to 48 hours and just abandoned the car. So
abandoned cars of Dubai or whatever.
Yeah, you know, Dubai, that's what it was.
You can search those and you'll find, you know, Ferrari Enzo with 2 inches of dust on top of it, you know, or other supercars that have been parked and abandoned.
So these aren't exactly, you know, McLarens in a lot of airport auction cases, but it's worth your time in calling to see what they have.
Yeah, there is a strategy you need to employ for this. Now, the strategy, according to the author, is that if you want to bid, because it is an auction, you should call first and then show up during the preview time slot. So, you know, the time before the auction, mm-hmm. when they allow you to walk around and take a look at the vehicles and really climb in them and, you know, inspect everything. That's the preview time slot. And if you come with a jump box and an OBD2 vehicle diagnostic scanner, you should do okay because you're able to check, you know, exactly what's going on with that vehicle. You know, the jump box will allow you to power up the vehicle or even start the car if possible.
Right.
And the OBD2 diagnostic tool will allow you to, you know, check any fault codes or anything like that that may be happening that, you know, maybe there's a reason it was abandoned at the airport, you know, other than the passport or whatever we talked about.
But, yeah.
He also tells you don't expect a whole lot here, right?
Right, that's the thing. It's going to be research heavy. Your odds are still not going to be stacked in your favor. If anything, I think it's a really interesting experiment just to learn more about what happens there. But again, this leads us to our next category. If you're aiming for an auction, your best shot is like a public auction.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, and we'll come to that in just a second, but I want to jump back for 1 second because I think this is so funny what the author says. Mm. If you go to an airport auction and you aim for ugly and unpopular,
right.
you might find a car for $1,000 or less. So it's not a bad option, but you know, for $1,000 you may need to settle, I suppose. And again, if you don't want to settle at an airport auction, then maybe you do go to a public auction like you're talking about, Ben.
Yeah, the next best thing, or the slightly better auction. So, if you've ever been to an auto auction, whether as a participant on either side of the deal or just as an observer who wants to be a fly on the wall, then it is readily apparent to everyone involved that there's a hierarchy, or like our author says in this, a pecking order.
Yeah, there are three types of sales that happen here at the public auctions. And the very worst cars are usually the ones that come from independent used car dealers that are trying to just completely unload whatever crap they've got on their lot, the worst of the worst. So they bring these to auction and just unload them on somebody that, you know, really hasn't done their homework, hasn't inspected them, hasn't, you know, doesn't really know their automotive stuff, I guess, and is looking for a cheap buy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the first kind.
And the second kind would be new car dealers who are offering trade-ins. Mm-hmm. So somebody trades in their current car to get a new one and get a little bit knocked off the price of the new car, and then the dealers will take that trade-in and then offer it off in an auction, hopefully for more than they bought it for.
And as the author says, you know, it's hit or miss in this case, right? And the third type, the least worst cars, the one, if you want to put it that way.
That's a very good way to phrase it.
Yeah, the least worst cars are usually the repossessions from banks, credit unions, finance companies, places like that.
Yeah.
But the problem is, now, you know, it's just funny that he doesn't say the best. He says the least worst. But it's really difficult to buy a vehicle here in a smart way. I mean, you have to really know your stuff. You have to really understand what's going on when you look at that vehicle. Again, bringing that jump box or that OBD2 scanner, that's important.
Yeah.
You know, really inspect the vehicle, really know what you're looking at. Do a lot of research ahead of time. Mm-hmm. That'll go a long, long way. But again, three different types of sellers there at the auction, I guess. So the ones you want to go for are the ones that are the repossessions from banks, credit unions, finance companies.
Do you know why they're the least worst and not the best?
Why is that?
This is speculation on my part. I want to hear what you think, ladies and gentlemen. I would argue that the reason they're the least worst and not the best is because these are, since they are repos, that tells us a little bit about the owner. And people who are entering repossession have a much higher chance of being bad car owners when it comes to maintenance and when it comes to upkeep, you know?
Yeah, they just don't care.
Now, I'm not saying that all these people were, you know, like dastardly scoundrels or villains because, you know, terrible things can happen to anyone. But the odds of them getting regular tune-ups, the odds of them keeping an eye on fluids, it's just lower across the board.
Yeah, this is, there's a possibility that you may get a vehicle that, you know, someone had enough money for the down payment and to get it off the lot with the first payment. And then, you know, for the next 3 months they didn't pay, then it's repoed and, you know, ends up here in this public auction.
Yeah.
And that's where you see it. But you can imagine that somebody who knows that it's not going well for them, it's not going to end well, they're not really going to care if there's a cigarette burn in the seat. They're not going to care if the, you know, the window's got a crack in it, or, you know, care about things like oil changes, or, you know, keeping the tires fresh or anything like that. It's going to be run down. And again, you got to remember all the way through this, we're talking about a car for $1,000. So, you know, the condition already is going to be that great. Because, you know, auction houses or, you know, public auctions, they have every level of vehicle that you would want. I mean, they've got luxury vehicles. They've got all the way down to, you know, the bottom end, I guess, you know, the extreme economy vehicles. So, again, you need to know what you're doing here, but it's a difficult place to shop. You really need to know your stuff.
Yeah. There's another category that I would like to describe using a different title.
Okay.
So our author here calls the next category the spare car. But I prefer to think of it as the nepotism market.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because this is where you use your personal social contacts and you know someone, kind of a pre-verified, pre-cleared private seller. So instead of, you know, John J. Doe from Craigslist or Auto Trader, you have a friend that you've known for a while, or you have a family member who has a car that they don't use very often.
Yeah, my uncle's got this Corvette, but has been parked next to the garage for, you know, 15 years.
Right.
Wants to unload it, you know, that kind of thing. So I call this the word of mouth car.
That's, you know, that's a little nicer way to say it.
I guess so. You know, it's one of those that, you know, again, people kind of talk about this one. You know, they first hint that, you know, something's available, or if you've spread word, you know, that you're looking for a cheap used car. That sometimes happens. You know, you know what? A lot of people get on Facebook or Twitter or, you know, whatever, and kind of advertise themselves and say, hey, you know, I'm looking for a car for about $1,000. Does anybody have anything available?
Yeah,
that happens now too. But mostly, what happens is, you know, it's more of a casual conversation. You run into some old friend and you start to talk. And again, you know, my grandfather's got this Buick that hasn't moved in 12 years.
So it needs tires, needs a tune up, needs somebody to get in there with a mask and just dust out the interior.
Yeah. So what would he take for it? Probably like $500. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it's done, because then I can put $500 into it, and I still get a car for, you know, $1,000 or less. So this word of mouth thing, or even if you want to do it, you know, electronically or whatever. I mean, you can try this, but there's no, you know, there's no schedule to this one. It just kind of, these things kind of fall into your lap.
Right. You can't really bet on a specific time of year or anything like that. One thing that I like about this, I think this is one of the best choices for parents who are helping a kid learn to drive, or if you're listening to this and you're a new driver, like 15 to 17 or whatever, and your folks have told you, you know, it's a life lesson now. You have to earn the money yourself to buy the car, and you're looking at prices of new sedans, and you're thinking, holy smokes, how am I going to save up? What's the minimum average now, like 34 grand or 32 grand?
I think so, yeah.
For a sedan?
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah, for a new sedan, that's a lot of scratch. That's a big hill of beans.
That's the average sedan.
Yes.
Yeah, 34,000 or something like that. Crazy.
And there's, you know, realistically, that's a very, very, very large number. It's a high goal to meet. So one way to get around that is just check with the relatives. A lot of my relatives did this. When I was growing up, they would make deals for, like, maybe an older relative who's no longer driving anymore, but they've got that Taurus that just won't die, you know?
Yeah, and but they can't drive it.
But they can't drive it.
Yeah. So it's doing no good. It's sitting in a garage somewhere, or maybe outside, even worse, for years at a time sometimes, or, you know, before anybody will give it any kind of love.
Right. And that means, you know, there are some definite things that you have to add into the cost of it. Maybe they'll sell it to you for $1,000. I've seen it before in like a barter system kind of thing where they would say, okay, you can have, you know, great uncle Jehoshaphat's. I don't have a Jehoshaphat uncle, but great uncle Jehoshaphat's old car for $800, and you have to mow his lawn every summer. You know, like, you, for the rest of the summer, you have to mow his lawn every month or something.
Until
like
you're out of college.
Until you, yeah, yeah, right? However they end up sticking you.
Or a year or whatever.
Yeah, don't be afraid to bargain in that regard. But the thing is, the other costs come inherent with that. You're almost definitely going to have to buy a new set of tires.
Yeah.
Because if they're left too long, then they're just going to rot out.
Yeah.
But still, depending on how you play it, this could be worth your time, and these the people who would be selling the car in this point want to help you. They don't want to get over on you.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this is a possibility, but again, there's no, you know, date when you can go and take a look at these vehicles and you know that, you know, 3 months ahead of time you're going to go to this auction and buy it. These are the ones, again, that fall into your lap. So you have to be ready when it happens. And again, there's some proactive things you can do to make it work out for you. And we've got one more to go. It's the best option. But I think we're going to take a word from our sponsor first. And we're back. And Ben, I was telling you that I think we're down to the final one here. We're down to the best option.
Mm-hmm. Or the least worst.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's the least worst. But actually, this one doesn't sound too bad. And I'll tell you, this afternoon I've been kind of poking around some of these sites that we're going to talk about.
Oh,
and,
yeah?
And they're interesting. There's a lot more to them than just cars. But the author thinks that maybe the penny pincher's paradise comes in the form of government auctions.
Yes, government auctions. The best car you can buy for less than a grand is probably going to be at a government auction. And look, just let's go ahead and say it. The $1,000 Ferrari, let's rip the Band-Aid off now, Scott.
Yeah.
It's a myth. It's a unicorn. Mm-hmm. It's, if there's any Ferrari that's $1,000, unless there's a miracle, you don't want it.
Yeah.
But for $1,000 or less, you can actually get a pretty decent vehicle that has been maintained because it was part of a fleet.
Yeah, that's possible, because we're talking about, you know, government surplus vehicles or, you know, confiscated property, you know, things that have been abandoned in some cases. But we're talking about, for the most part, you know, the city service vehicles, you know, the small pickup trucks, you know, that carry the fuel tanks in the back, you know, for other vehicles in the city, or, you know, the maybe the fire chief's car, you know, things like that come up
right
for auction. So it's not a bad way to go. The thing is, you don't have to get a police car. So, you know, that's a myth, I guess, is that a lot of people think, well, it's got to be a police car. It's going to be a Crown Vic. It's going to be a Taurus, something like that.
Yeah.
Or a Caprice, you know, from, you know, earlier days. But there are cars that are better than that. But you got to think that, you know, mayors and county commissioners and fire chiefs, as I said, or detectives and other government employees get cars that don't have some of the cheaper options that they put into police cars, because they know those things are going to get trashed.
Right. A lot of people who have to travel routinely for work in service of Uncle Sam here in the States, they end up having cars that... Okay, let's say the other thing, too. A lot of these cars are going to have high mileage by the time they get to you.
Oh, very high. And if nothing else, I don't know if some of these cars that we're talking about have, you know, idle hour counters. So, you know, when the car is sitting idling, a lot of police cars have incredible numbers for idle hours versus driving, you know, time. So that's another thing to consider. And trucks have that, too. You know, work trucks. If you're interested in buying, you know, a city service truck that was, you know, part of, like, the, you know, the tree crew that goes around and trims all the trees. I don't know the term for that, I guess. You know, the lineman cars or whatever. You know, a lot of those vehicles are going to sit idle for a long time, but they're going to be running the whole time. So lots of hours on those engines.
So here's the way that we've got a little more to say about this, but I want to immediately get to this part, Scott. Here's the way that you can find these auctions and these vehicles. Because if someone's never been to an auction before, it can seem kind of intimidating, mm-hmm. right? Because there's definitely an art to it. And if you just show up without a strategy, you and your money will be soon parted.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You're the sucker there.
Yeah, yeah. And they make a living off rubes.
Yeah.
So the first thing you would want to do is check out places like GovDeals, G-O-V-Deals, mm-hmm. to make sure my accent doesn't screw us up there.
Yeah, and there's another one called Public Surplus. And, you know, if you go to, you know, autos or maybe even, I think on Public Surplus it's called Motor Pool. And you'll be able to see what's available there. And you can even sort these auctions by state or by, you know, distance from your house, things like that. You can sort them just as you would any other, you know, online seller. And you would not believe some of the deals that are on those sites. I mean, really, the auctions tend to stay fairly low. I mean, unless there's something really, really desirable. I was looking this morning, again, at these sites.
Yeah.
And it's not just cars. There's all kinds of things. I mean, there's jewelry and framed artwork and furniture and toys and all kinds of stuff. Electronics, you know, just things that have been abandoned, you know, property or items that have been lost, that kind of thing. There. If you want a fire truck, Ben, you can buy a fire truck. There are fire trucks available from everywhere from $125,000,
and you
can imagine what that looks like.
Yeah, I know.
Down to $250, and it looks decent. I don't know if it, you know, I don't know if the pumping system works or anything like that, but you know, all the way down to that, and there's five pages of fire trucks on that site as of right now. And it works just the way any other auction works. You know, you find out how many days and hours are left, and you watch the bid, and, you know, there's a minimum bid. It tells you what the current bid is.
Right.
And you're able to bid like that. I'm sure that there's a process for you to sign up, because they don't want anybody just bidding whatever on the items. You have to identify yourself and, you know, qualify as a bidder. And once you do, I guarantee you, you'll be surprised by what you find on some of these sites. They're pretty remarkable.
I absolutely agree. And the cool part about that is, if you're just window shopping online, you don't have to feel obligated to do anything. And just from a staying informed standpoint, mm-hmm. it's a really good use of your time, because the more often you look at these things, the better your understanding of the general trends will become. And one of the first things you'll notice is that there are some cars that are always on these lists.
Yeah, there's some commonalities among all of these auctions, and those would be things like, you know, Ford Tauruses and Crown Vics and Impalas and, you know, Ford Rangers and F-150s. In fact, Ben, just this morning I saw a Ford Ranger that was a 2007, I think, again, another $250 bid. Now, there's like 4 days left in the auction. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to watch this one and see what happens with it, but it looked interesting. I think it was a park service vehicle. Looked like it was decent, had, you know, relatively low miles, and it was running and all that. But, again, it's a 2007 vehicle, so it's 10 years old. But is it worth $250? It probably is. I mean, there are other versions of this, too. I mean, you can get heavy-duty Ford F-150s that, you know, are a little bit higher in price, but man, what a great place to pick up, you know, just a weekend work truck, you know, something that you can haul, you know, topsoil from the nursery to your house in, or, you know, go pick up that big piece of furniture or the grill or whatever you need to. Some of these are really great deals. Some of them are not great deals. I mean, really, again, investigate, because I saw some vehicles, Ben, this is crazy.
Yeah.
They're selling some in the same list, but if you don't read the details, you don't get this. They were on beach patrol. And they're on beach patrol on the coast where there's salt water.
Yep.
So, you know, the problem is the entire underbody is just about gone. It's you know, Swiss cheese with rust.
Yeah.
So check it out. You know, make sure that you read all the details. Make sure you know what you're getting into in every situation like this. And, you know, the chances are, though, you're not going to get something that's brand new. It's always going to be something that's, you know, again, 10 years old or 7 years old or, you know, whatever. It's going to be a bit worn out, but if you want something that's just a good A to B, you know, I got to get to work and home type of vehicle, or to school and home type of vehicle, this may be the place to go. But there are a couple of tricks here. So there's a way that you choose a good one. And the author says that 90% of your success with these cars will come from showing up in person and inspecting the vehicles again. So he's a big proponent of showing up and actually looking, putting your hands on the vehicle and really checking things out. And I completely understand this. Again, you know, the sites that, you know, you look at, Craigslist is typically something you look locally, typically.
Yeah.
eBay is sometimes a greater distance, so, you know, you're more tempted to buy something from farther away, typically. And these auctions, I would guess, you know, if the price is right, you might also be tempted to buy something that comes from, you know, Utah if you're in Maine. Or, you know, long, long distances, and you're not able to get there within the 3 days and inspect the thing. But maybe narrow your search to something that's in your area and you can go inspect it. That's the advice.
That's key. Here's another great part. One of the massive advantages that buying a former government car affords you is that typically they will have been associated, remember when we talked about fleet maintenance, they will be associated with some sort of maintenance department, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that means that they will have maintenance, not only will they have maintenance records, but they will probably have no issue showing them to you.
Oh, yeah.
You can ask, let me see what happened on beach patrol.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can ask questions. You can say, you know, has this car ever been damaged, or why is it on the lot to begin with? And they may say, it's as simple as, you know, we replaced all of our vehicles this year, and this is the old fleet.
Or this is like an ancient curse.
Yeah, I suppose that could be the case, too, an ancient curse. Now, I said that 90% of your success is showing up and inspecting the vehicles. The other 10%?
Yeah.
Luck. The other 10% comes down to luck.
Which can be a hard thing for people to take, but it's absolutely true,
well,
man.
Well, 10%. I mean, that's hardly a risk. And as he points out here, you know, these government auctions are probably the place you want to go if you want to get a car that's decent for under $10,000, as long as you do those two things. As long as you inspect them, you ask questions. As long as you can get there and see it in person, hands-on, and make sure that you're making a good deal, because that's extremely critical in this case, especially if, you know, this is your last $1,000 that you've got, you know, for something like this. You don't want to dump $1,000 into a car if that's all you've got, and then you don't have another $1,000 to recoup to do this again.
Yeah, there are some important things to evaluate, right, before you even get out into the $1,000 car search game. And before we get to that, I do want to say one more thing about government auctions, and this is something that I think you'd be pretty interested in, Scott. So it's not really a secret that both you and I have traveled a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and you traveled more than I have, but...
Well, I'm older.
Well, we're both, you know, we get around.
Yeah, sure we do.
Yeah. So one of the things that I learned from my older family members, and one thing that I hope you're all fans of, ladies and gentlemen, is whenever I go to a new town, especially a small town, I try to find the local paper. And one thing I didn't realize for a long time is that just because I wasn't looking in these things as, you know, a younger guy, I already had a car and stuff, a lot of those local papers are going to have very important announcements about local auctions.
Or estate sales.
Estate sales, that's another huge one, because you can find cars there too.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is that on the federal level, a lot of these auctions are going to be a little more competitive for certain types of cars, right? On the local level, you can find some real gems. So if you were ever on a road trip from, let's say, Illinois to where somewhere that would be kind of a long drive?
Nebraska.
To Nebraska. And you stop for lunch at a small town, you know, off the interstate or whatever. While you're noshing on a sandwich, man, pick up that local newspaper and you might end up making a deal in a day.
It's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
Now, one can I throw a little bit of cold water on this? A little bit of a wet blanket.
Please do.
Is that if you do go to an estate sale, it's not always the case, but sometimes the family's running that, and they kind of have an emotional attachment to the vehicle that they may be selling,
which might translate to a tax of sorts.
Well, yeah, I guess a tax if you want to call it that, an overly inflated price. So, you know, you may you know, roll up on this estate sale, and, you know, the family's out there, you know, that invite you into the house, and everything's for sale. Every single thing is for sale, including that, you know, the two cars in the garage, and one of them is a 1959 Cadillac, and you want that Cadillac more than anything, but that was granddad's car.
Right.
And they decide that, you know, that thing is worth $70,000. you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, that's an overinflation right there. But, you know, let's say that it's $10,000 above whatever market is. So watch out for stuff like that too. You got to kind of know the market, know what, you know, what's a deal and what's not a deal. But the $1,000 car, I mean, I guess at an estate sale, it's a possibility, but it's probably, you know, the one that's been parked out in the backyard for a while.
Yeah.
Might have to tow it home.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true.
There's a chance. Or maybe it's a, you know, the kid's car or something, you know, that, you know, that they've had laying there since, you know, he graduated from college and, they decided that, you know, just didn't do anything with it. Didn't sell for scrap, didn't put it in the local paper,
right.
and now's the time to get rid of it at this yard sale.
Because they're done with lawn ornaments.
Yeah, I don't care what it is, you know, $500, it's yours.
You know, that reminds me of one of the weirder but more plausible urban legends in the world of automobiles. Remember those stories about, some of these have been verified as true, there would be stories about someone looking for a car and a guy goes through the classifieds in the newspaper and he sees like a new Cadillac or new Corvette and the asking price is cartoonishly low.
Yeah.
It's like $900 or best offer.
Yeah.
And he's so intrigued by this that he says, well, I just at least want to see what terrible thing is wrong with the car. And you find out it's like, it's a divorcee whose ex-partner left them or whatever, and they took the car, and now they're getting rid of it to, like, stick it to that person.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, again,
I mean, that's so rare, but it reminds me, because that's really happened before.
But I wonder how many times that's really, truly happened to somebody.
Maybe,
I mean,
like, 3 or 4 times.
Maybe, or, you know, maybe it's just, you know, that old project car that somebody had laying around, you know,
yeah,
that is valuable, but they just want it out of the garage. I could see my wife doing this to me. I really could.
No,
you know,
way.
If I was gone, I think that car would be gone for $100.
You're talking about the Newport?
Yeah, it would be gone for almost nothing. Or somebody could just take it and she'd be happy.
Would we still be friends if you were like, Ben, while I was gone, my wife sold the Newport, and I said, Scott, I hate for you to find out about it this way, but I know.
Yeah, why do you think I never take, like, you know, my own vacation? Like, you know, because I know when I come back, there may be a surprise. I try to keep my eye on that thing.
Do you check the garage every night?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, on trash day, I make sure she hasn't pulled it down to the curb.
Man.
Yeah, I know.
You guys are fighting over that garage.
No, well, not really, no.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? There may be some news coming about that sometime soon. So,
oh, cool.
You know, I'm going to throw that out there.
Nice.
And
foreshadowing.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, well, stay tuned for an update. No spoilers yet. There may be some news on the way. And there's one thing that I want to add that I think is one of the most important aspects of this, and it's not mentioned explicitly in the article, but it's a crucial point. When you buy a car for $1,000 or less, you're not really buying a car for $1,000 or less. What you're doing is putting a down payment on a car, and you get the car and the title for $1,000, but the odds of you having to do pretty substantial repairs,
yeah,
are going to be much, much higher than if you had bought a newer used car or a new car. You have to factor in. I would say if you only have $1,000 and you are only going to have $1,000, you know, not in perpetuity, but only $1,000 you can dedicate to the car, I don't know if you should do it. I think you need to factor in additional scratch to additional scratch to have those repairs done, because if you get it and you want to drive it, you're also going to need to do those repairs very soon after purchasing the vehicle.
And that is what the author calls the uncomfortable truth that we had kind of teased at the the head of this episode. So yeah, you're right. You're going to put down $1,000, but you may need to spend an additional $500 on mechanical repairs or leaks or whatever, or $350 on tires or whatever the case may be. It's important that you get it back into decent mechanical shape, because we are talking about, the $1,000 decent car. So, even if it's close to $1,000, I guess maybe that's the author's point, is that, yeah, you can spend $1,000 for the title and the vehicle and, you get to take it home. But there's going to be some other costs that are going to come up along the way. That's a given, I think. But he says the best thing that you can do, the biggest favor that you can do for yourself when you're in this position, is that you shouldn't be lazy in your pursuit. You should go where you have the least uncertainty and then invest in the car that you think you can kind of bring out of this pile of junk that you're buying for, you know, $1,000 or less. I mean, because sometimes it is a pile of junk, really. I mean, let's be honest about it. Other times it's, you know, decent looking, but, you know that it could be a little better than it is now just with some elbow grease and some, you know, some care.
Absolutely. And well said, Scott. This is concluding, I believe, our episode on the fine art of buying a car for $1,000 or less, asterisk, because you're going to have to put down some more cash later. And we hope that you've enjoyed it. We also hope that you've had an example in the past or experience with this sort of situation. If so, let us know. How did you find a car that was $1,000 or less?
I would love to talk to people that have bought government auction vehicles.
Yeah,
you know, that have bought, you know, the F-150 that was part of the the park service or whatever in your local town. Is it a decent buy? Is it something that you still use today?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would love to know if that's something that's that is a viable option. Really, I mean, we can read about it here, but is that really practical? Is it something that really happens in real life? I got a friend he used to live in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Bought an F-150 as a work truck, had, you know, like the rack on the back and everything, you know, for things to just be stored above, you know, ladders or whatever. And he loved it. I don't know how long he kept it,
mm-hmm.
but he had it for a short time. And I don't think he paid $1,000 for it. I think he paid a little bit more than that. But it was a decent buy, and it got him through whatever he needed to do around the house. You know, it was for projects or whatever.
Yeah.
He had something in mind with it. But I would love to hear from somebody, again, government auctions, private auctions. If you got
sure.
a junkyard and bought a running car,
wow,
that'd be a good story because
yeah.
that's rare. Or, you know, have a friend in the, you know, the towing and wrecker service.
Mm-hmm.
Even more rare.
So
that's the worst.
Yeah. So whether this is a tale of shrewdness and financial triumph or a cautionary tale that you feel your fellow listeners need to hear, let us know. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter where we are CarStuffHSW, and you can write to us directly. We are
CarStuff@HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.